Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. And this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report.
Love theme.
Oh, I was so excited to hear what kind of music Ken would have for us. We do this every episode where I say it's the Clone Wars Report, and then some music comes in. I expected something very, very beautiful, but I didn't know exactly what it would be.
Yeah, that was beauty right there is what you got. That was pure beauty.
That was some classic cartoon man singing in the shower.
Yeah, I guess experience. I also love bits that are never intended, that maybe aren't great, but never stop.
Oh, yeah. You mean like the beginning of this podcast? Yeah. It's great. Yes. And all right. I'll keep doing it. The beautiful love theme is, of course, entirely appropriate because that's what this episode of Clone Wars Report is about. Just in case anybody's listening to it for the very first time, we should say your names. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
That's right. I'm Ken Napsok.
And like we said, this is the Clone Wars Report, where we will be reporting on The Senate Spy. It is Season 2, Episode 4, written by Melinda Shue, directed by Stuart Lee. This is, if you're listening and watching along with us, this is the stretch of Clone Wars where it's real important that we're watching it in the chronological order because we are bouncing around everywhere. And it is great to get back to this one standalone episode. nothing in Star Wars really stands alone, but this is just one episode instead of a whole arc. Ken, do you feel ready for the summary of The Senate Spy?
I absolutely not only am ready, I need it. Now explain what that means afterwards.
Espionage. The Jedi Council suspects that Senator Rush Clovis of the Banking Clan is in league with the Separatists. Desperate to expose this dangerous alliance, the Jedi turn to Obi-Wan to pressure Anakin, to pressure Senator Amidala to make use of her past relationship with Clovis to get to the truth. Despite Anakin's multi-layered objections, Padme feels it is her duty to uncover the truth. So, Clovis, Padme, and Anakin venture to Cato Nemodia. Padme discovers a clandestine plot between Clovis, Nemodian Senator Lot Dodd, and Geonosian leader Poggle the Lesser to build a massive droid factory for their collective profit. But further financial entanglements are revealed. The Nemodians wish to be free of their debt to the Banking Clan, so they take their turn at exploiting Clovis's feelings for Padme by poisoning her. But through Padme's bravery and determination, the plot is foiled. Anakin and Padme escape with the stolen plans of the droid factory and their relationship intact for now. They race back to the Jedi and leave Clovis to his doom? Question mark. That's my summary, Ken.
That, sir, was a spectacular summary. I think we should start transcribing these and putting these on a little book.
I even confused myself just a little bit with this one, but I think I made my point.
No, really good. And why I needed it to jump in real quick. I obviously watched the episode and took notes, but I took almost intentionally less notes. I want to almost feel this one out because I thought this is just not only is it a great episode, but just like perfect timing for just some of the conversations we've been having here, or even some of the thoughts I've been having about Padme or Padme and Anakin and things were going on. This is a real great episode for that kind of stuff. But I kind of so narrow focused on it. I was rewatching it today and going, yeah, there's some lot of good stuff too with Separatists, the Clone War and Banking Clan, all that kind of great stuff, the intrigue. So you put it all into a beautiful bucket.
Yeah, I think that's what's great about this episode. And one of the things that I'm really excited to talk about as we do our big watch of the Clone Wars is that there's this great surface story that is all about Anakin and Padme's relationship, which we will discuss. But there's all of these gears grinding that is about the war, about the Separatists, about the political realities of the galaxy far, far away, and how much gets motivated by those, frankly, strong political opinions that are put in there. Mm-hmm. That, and this episode really has a lot of those. Well, in order to understand the actual plot, you can understand the relationship between Anakin and Padme by just kind of a quick view, but everyone's motivation and why are things happening, like literally the mechanics of the plot are all driven by these gears of war and profit and greed. And that's fascinating. So let's dive into our overall reactions. Did you love this episode, Ken? Did you like it? Did you struggle with it? Where are we at?
I love this one. And it's funny. I always do this thing where like back then I maybe didn't. This one, I did like it then. I really liked it then. It definitely stood out. And I think I appreciate it. I'll use the word appreciate it even more, especially when we talk about what the Clone Wars was able to do with the character of Padme and really just spend more time with her, number one, but two, also just give her perspective a little bit more and just played better in some areas. And so that was there. I this is a relationship character study, but this is also a spy thriller. And that's something we both enjoy in Star Wars too. And then the political stuff as well. So I had a lot of fun rewatching this because in doing this, we are focusing on the episodes. You know, a lot of times I watch Clone Wars with a sandwich in one hand, Twitter in the other or something like that. Really fun. And I think important for me as a Star Wars fan who wants to continue to grow and reexamine things to really look at these episodes. And this one had a lot.
Yeah, and I think this is a really interesting episode to examine for what's in it, but also just for the variety of style that's available in the Clone Wars show, that this is very light on action, as we will get when we get to our favorite action moments. That's going to be a short conversation.
Yeah.
Because there is not a ton. There's next to no action. This is all relationships and political intrigue. And I really, really like this episode. I think I've always enjoyed it because of all the things that it has to say about Anakin and Padme's relationship. But I appreciated that. Appreciated such a great word, Ken. I appreciate it even more on this watch because it shows Padme being vulnerable and human, but resilient. We've been talking a lot lately, as you're inferring in referencing about Padme often being a little bit of the moral or political compass of Star Wars and of the Clone Wars, and that often the things that she says is right. But this is an episode that shows that, yep, that's true. But also, she truly loves Anakin. She's truly human and vulnerable to making, you know, debatable choices or decisions or perspectives because emotions, like we all are. And to me, having her be often very, very correct, and everyone should just listen to her, it's great to balance that out by showing her as human. And then we also like see the seeds of Anakin's fall, but he doesn't give in yet in very specific ways, which is really interesting to me. Yeah. And then I love the political side of the war in seeing that big picture story, that for the Jedi, fighting the political side of the war is way more difficult than even the physical battle. You know, the physical battle is a problem, but you know, the Jedi are not set up well to deal with manipulation, intrigue, moral compromises, the relationship between the Jedi and the Senate, and you know, political truths of the galaxy. And it's great to see them have to be stuck in that mire. And the final, like, big picture thing that I really love about this is it is a political intrigue. It is foreshadowing, you know, the tragedy of Anakin and Padme. So there are lots of like dark shadows, and there are lots of horrible things that are being foreshadowed, or horrible things that are literally being planned by the separatists or being done. But all of these horrible things in dark shadows are being done in beautiful, refined spaces, because that's part of the point of this, is that it is all of these proper people who are in the government, who are respected in society, who have a lot of money, a lot of power, who are causing the horror and the pain. And I love that contrast. It's dark shadows and horrible things in beautiful spaces.
Beautiful spaces, some great designs. Yes, indeed. But that's well said on that one for sure. Great way to dive into this.
All right. In fact, let us continue with the diving in by talking about the moral, Ken. So the moral of this actual episode that flashes on our screen is a true heart should never be doubted. How did that one grab you? How did it affect you?
I just simply said Padme Amidala, moral compass. End of conversation. No. And actually, there's a flip side. I added this one this morning on rewatch. I said, with Lot Dodd, a false heart should never be trusted. there's layers to that, even not layers that excuse Nemodians or Trade Federation. But there's, as you said, the intrigue, the layers and the compromise on the political side are big. As far as the true heart one, I focus on it, especially when it's at the end of the episode. There's some great... When I say great, just important relationship stuff up top that we're going to dive into, that some of it is headlines and posters of, hey, here's maybe not what to do. I'm looking at you, Anakin. There's this kind of things and big themes. But I love at the end of the episode where she kind of has right or wrong. If you want to, you know, hey, Padme, stand your ground or anything like that. At the end, she's kind of like, oh, sorry, Anakin, I made you doubt me. And I love that he's like, nah, you didn't. And it was a real sweet, tender moment. And I'm looking for those moments, right? Because they have a troublesome relationship at times. We know it's ill-fated, and so you can sometimes see it through that light. But I love seeing the moments at the beginning and the end of the episode that are also just real. And there's sometimes fights, arguments, and mistakes made in relationships. And I just love that moment. And just for me, it was kind of like whose heart was the true one? Yes, her. A little bit of true heart in Anakin in that moment for me is what I took away from it.
Yeah. I think that is such a beautiful moment right at the end of the episode. And that's really what I thought of when I watched the episode and saw this moral, that a true heart should never be doubted. Sometimes these morals can be taken lots of different ways. Sometimes they are a little bit more kind of just life wisdom or coming of age advice for all of us. This one feels like it is pretty directly about Padme. that from that perspective, that Anakin shouldn't doubt her. And that to me ties to Revenge of the Sith. There were some moments where he should have, you know, listened to Padme in terms of what Padme was literally saying and listened to her argument, but he should have trusted, you know, their connection, their bond, her perspective, trusted her heart. This is a great episode where Anakin is, you know, in danger of giving in to fear of loss and jealousy, but he never should have doubted Padme. And even at that end, it seems like Padme is doubting herself about what it cost to do this mission, like that she caused Anakin this pain, or probably, you know, pain for herself for having to do this not fun mission at all.
Yeah.
So it is like a great, the true heart that should never be doubted is Padme's, it feels like, but mm-hmm. that seems like a lesson that Anakin accepts in this episode for a time and then loses later in the story. But it also seems like a lesson that Padme is learning about herself. You know, again, yeah. it goes to me that this is an episode that reinforces that Padme is extremely strong, extremely on the right path. But the point of these stories is that heroes get challenged. And this is an episode yeah. where Padme is challenged. And even she Absolutely. Needs to be reminded that her own true heart should not be doubted by herself.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely some, I don't want to say just Padme standing up for herself like this is the first time, or but there's some big moments where she knows herself. She knows what she deserves. It's just, I keep going back to just amazing relationship stuff. And I'm so happy to get it. But yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Anakin says some things that I will say, in my opinion, as a person in a relationship, are simply things you shouldn't say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go on the record with that one. Let's dive into the big themes, the big ideas that are at stake in the episode. Certainly is the relationship between Anakin and Padme, but how did you kind of perceive that in terms of which ideas were in competition with one another? Where did your mind go?
That's a great way to say it, in competition with one another. I'll break it down even more. Love and being confused with control and attachment. Trust is a big one, obviously. Relationships, duty, love is the death of duty, the big old Game of Thrones quote that keeps popping up all the time, but also, are they in competition, or can they be in concert with each other? And this idea, breaking it down to like this could have been a Thursday night NBC drama episode, right? With no life, no nothing. What we bring into the relationships, and that doesn't necessarily just mean romantic, but what is Rush Clovis bringing into his relationship with Lot Dodd here? And I was like, what do we bring into them that maybe fuels our decisions, right or wrong? And then what we allow on the other side of it in relationships, what we allow to be done to those we love or to ourselves, are all kind of the big themes that you say at stake and in competition. That's big and small, all of it at stake.
Yeah, it's a lot of great stuff. And I think definitely, I feel like the big picture thing there is in this episode for me is this idea, your Game of Thrones quote, doing your duty versus your personal feelings. And I love the way that you phrase that of do they have to be in combat or can they be in concert? So I think that's a big one for me. But the other thing that you said that I want to talk about, and we'll come back to duty versus personal feelings. You're describing what people bring into relationships. And I love that in this episode, it is just kind of a reminder that even for massive galactic events that affect everyone, everything is sort of predicated on a personal relationship, on intimacy, trust, attachment. Everything in this episode happens about intimacy. And asking these questions of, is intimacy a weakness, a strength, which is a big Star Wars thing, is attachment a weakness or a strength? But this episode really adds the third option, or is it a tool for manipulation?
Yeah.
Which makes this episode just really dark. And it's just this chain of, there's a light touch to it, but the council really kind of starts by asking Obi-Wan to use his relationship with Anakin. Anakin is not going to answer anybody's summons to come to the Jedi Council when he's busy having his, homecoming with Padme. There's that great line of Anakin. He says, if I keep delaying, Obi-Wan will send a clone squad out to find me. That's really about a personal relationship. Yeah. And I believe that is predicated on Obi-Wan has sent a clone squad out to find Anakin before. Yeah. So you get like that layer of this ongoing relationship and Obi-Wan being always there to be somebody who can put pressure on Anakin. And then, the council being in this weird place to put pressure on Anakin to use his relationship to Padme so that then Padme can use her relationship to Clovis. And then it even takes this next evolution when the Nemodians have this financial relationship with Clovis that they don't want to have, where they owe money to the banking clan and they want to continue with their plans to profit off the war without having to be under the banking clan's thumb financially are on the hook for it. And it also just seems like they just don't like Rush Clovis, which fair enough. And they don't want him around. So you're right. It is like it's a big financial relationship and it's a personal relationship with Clovis. And then in order to get out of that, they also use Clovis's relationship to further their scheme. And they have that great line from Lot Dodd of, "I think Clovis would do anything to save her," meaning Padme, "and only we would have the antidote." So the whole thing is all sorts of intimate relationships, mm-hmm. almost all being used for manipulation mm-hmm. from the Jedi and the Republic. You can argue it is really unpleasant, but necessary to find out what's going on in the war from the Nemodians and the Geonosians. It's just pretty greedy and cruel. But that makes that moment at the end that you were talking about of Anakin saying your mission was a success, but I made you doubt me. Never. Really beautiful because it is this moment of resolution and all this manipulation that these two characters are able to say to one another. Like, despite all of the kind of ugly things we just did in terms of ideas of intimacy and trust, we can reaffirm to one another that we trust one another and that our bond, our attachment is still, you know, pure.
That has to be doubted. I'm taking everything in. I love what you're saying here, and I'm also just amazed. Like, this is a we talked about animation on the main show this week. If y'all haven't listened to that, check that out on just the future and what they can do at Disney Plus. And one of the things we talked about, it was like Clone Wars and Rebels were on kids networks, quote unquote. It's amazing. We got some deep stuff on a 22-minute kids program. And looking at the Anakin stuff and hearing what you're talking about here and this coming out the idea of what we bring into relationships, like, I don't know. It's pretty like this is I know some adults that I want to have sit down and watch this episode.
especially with
Rush and Lot too.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, we often to make it clear why we find these things valuable, sometimes talk about real world stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think it applies to many, many different moments in people's lives. But like for me, I think of some of the sort of Hollywood stuff. And again, that's because that's where we live and what we do. Not that it doesn't happen everywhere. But when I look at a theme like this, I think about the really good advice that when you come to a place like Hollywood, the truth is that a lot of success comes from relationships.
Yeah.
So you have to like carry that success. And you often get advice of like network. And then you meet people who are like, I can tell that you are networking with me right now.
Yes.
That you are, you know, you are Clovis charming someone because you have to. And I can feel the knife behind your back. Mm-hmm. But then that doesn't mean that making connections and making friendships and the truth that success often comes from relationships, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that isn't true. And when people do benefit is when they kind of trust, you know, and truly go out and make friends because they want to have friends. And then what do you know, out of the blue, somebody gets a job and they need to hire somebody else and they hire you. But it can happen both ways. But yeah. I feel like this episode to me reminds me of like really, really, really just have the true relationships that you want to have, because that's where things of actual value are going to come from.
I think you're describing why I never have tagged anyone on Twitter and said you want to come on a podcast.
Well, I mean, that depends. Is it sincere, right? I mean,
right. Yes. No. Yeah. God. I mean, this could easily turn into a 45 to hour long podcast on networking versus relationships. After you and I have many experiences of what this is, and you're so right. And I love that being tied in this episode. It's relationships and what that really means. Oh boy.
Yeah, and but into your great phrasing of it, of what you bring into it, right? If it is like that, wow, that person who is, you know, really successful, it seems really cool, and I really legitimately like them, and we legitimately have this in common, and I would legitimately like to hang out with them or have them on my podcast as a guest.
Yeah,
is all great because what you're bringing into it is true. If you're like, I don't really know anything about that person. I don't really care about this thing they want to talk to me about, but they have power and they might give me some. Then maybe that's not great what you're bringing into it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about this bigger picture idea of doing your duty versus personal feelings, which I think is really the main thrust of this episode. What sort of beats of duty versus personal feelings spoke to you?
I think it was the moment, the argument, the big argument where Padme and Anakin are in the pod, which has its own kind of soundproofing, I read, because there was clearly someone at one point questioned while they're having a private conversation in a Senate chamber that people could maybe hear. And there's a there's a sound shield over it. Look it up. It's fantastic. I love things like that. but it's a moment of just like, and there's a lot with Anakin we'll probably get into, I think there might have been part of Padme that would have said no to the task, no to the spying job, which is pretty important. Maybe you can see it as pretty important to the galaxy or the war or the effort or her efforts as a politician and finding the truth on things and all those kind of big things. I could have seen her say just sticking with no because my husband doesn't want me to, and I want to support that, but and go in that direction. You know, and it was a good moment. And then again, we're much to dive into on that, just that scene, I know. But just on I that was to me of and where it ends up of again, can you do both? It didn't end their relationship, or it shouldn't have, but it might have for Anakin. That's part of the stupid stuff he was saying and doing to me. And that's why it she wasn't like, all right, well, duty over you. It was like, now I'm myself, and this is what I bring, and this is what I could do, and this is and I need you to respect that. I need you to trust me, and I need you to support me. All the things he wasn't doing in that scene.
Right. There's interpersonal stuff going on there. There's anger, right? But Padme is not doing this because she's angry at Anakin. That's part of what's going on, because he is, you know, being a hypocrite and yeah, being super controlling by saying you can't do this. But she is pushing back on that. But we also know from the character of Padme of like, well, yeah, that she would agree to do this regardless of anything. It doesn't have anything to do with Anakin. It is about the greater good.
Yeah, the greater good, the purpose, and her purpose being just as important as his. And I love the, you know, you can read it as, you know, snarky banter, but it's not. It's when she throws it back in his face, literally what he said, you know, about duty and missions and all those kind of things. Yeah, great mirror reflecting back on Anakin, and hopefully, you know, you're rooting for him to learn those lessons. Again, we know where the story goes, but powerful scene, and that's where I went to on that conflict versus concert. Our new episode.
Yeah. I want to just kind of walk through these beats in order, because I think they're so rich. And I think one of the things that makes this episode so powerful is it isn't just the conflict. We get to see the concert that you're talking about. I love that it starts with this great scene of Anakin returning from a long time leading the army. And we get to see Padme's worry, right? She's so happy that he came home. There's that tension where she's like, how did you actually get here? And he's like, oh, I took this other thing because, you know, my military transport blew up. And it's kind of played for comedy, but it's this great reminder that Padme's been sitting there on beautiful, safe Coruscant. Mm-hmm. Well, Anakin is truly in deep danger. And then we get that great moment of Anakin calling Padme's apartment home, and Padme is moved by it, and just seeing, honestly, just like domesticity, right? Of just like, what are we going to have for dinner? And let's kick 3PO out so we can canoodle, you know? So it starts in this great place of concert, and we get to actually see not only Padme's worry for him, but their true connection. Did you enjoy seeing that moment of actual connection?
I really did. And we can make some fun little jokes too, but we don't get a lot of, you know, Star Wars sex scenes, but it was like, yeah, they're in this moment. 3PO, get the hell out. And he's brought home sushi, which I think, as I was reading too, that's what is the translation in Arabesh on the box. So he brought home some sushi and
she's going to make five blossom bread,
and she's dressed up and, you know, ready. I loved it. And we don't get those moments. We don't get to see them happy. And she isn't just like, oh, you think this is home. Just like she's this complete 360 degree person who wants that, who needs that kind of connection. And I think one of the larger themes I want to talk about is just how they don't, they're not allowed to experience a lot of that. And so it was a powerful moment. It was a fun moment. And it was also real powerful and a great way to start to see how quickly that can devolve. And again, what you bring into the relationships can affect the steps forward.
Yeah, yeah. And just start with this peek of what into what their life could be if it was in a different time, a different place, a different situation. Yeah. And then I love that this kind of calm, this concert gets broken. Obi-Wan is looking for Anakin, and Anakin says, don't take this personally. Duty comes first, especially in wartime. And then I think this is one of the most interesting beats for Padme. She does get a little hurt. She gets angry because I think she's enjoying this, you know, kind of real relationship, but also this, they're pretending it's home and that he lives there. And, you know, the conflict of reality is outside the apartment door. And then by Anakin really forcefully saying like, no, I got to go back to the Jedi. Duty comes first. I think, you know, it's hurtful for Padme because it's reality coming in and the reminder that Anakin is a Jedi. And I think she's hurt. She's emotional about Anakin rushing off because she's human. He was away facing horrible danger. He just got home and she loves him and misses him. And I love that we get to see Padme being a flawed, normal human who is in this complex relationship with someone she truly loves. And I feel like that's what she's mad about, or not even mad. She's just upset. She's hurt. She loves him and she misses him and he's off again and he doesn't seem to quite get it.
Well, yeah, we could be relationship counselors with Padme. Joseph and I aren't qualified. We haven't degrees hanging on our walls here. But yeah, you know, like you're right. She's not mad at him, the situation, but his read is to, you know, take it as him. I do that a lot too. I can sometimes be like, well, am I being attacked? No. And so very real moment. And I love, like you said, I love that Padme in this moment is allowed to be all things. And that's important to me.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think that respect for Padme being multifaceted does carry into that next scene that you're talking about, the great Senate scene with the, audio bubble, I guess. I'll look it up. I do love that that placement, that location. And I think, you know, Padme does still get angry. But I think, you know, she isn't, again, she's not angry for the reasons that maybe Anakin has fully seen, that I think she is. Yeah. She's angry at his hypocrisy of saying, you know, becoming an agent of the Jedi is not a job for you. And she gets mad at him about, you're always in danger. It's about his controlling nature. She throws that duty line back in his face, but don't take this personally. Duty comes first, especially in wartime, which I don't think Padme is criticizing that line. I think she's trying to get Anakin to see his hypocrisy, that they need to let one another be who they are, which means that they both are people who rush into danger for the greater good. And I think, you know, that's what she's really trying to get through to him, even though she is angry. You know, it's totally in character, this moment for Padme, that in this battle between doing your duty versus personal feelings, that everything just kind of flies out the window. She's still mad at Anakin for all these interpersonal things, but everything flies out the window when she realizes what is at stake. And she's like, yeah, of course I'll do this incredibly unpleasant job of basically flirting with a guy I don't like in order to find out if he is a spy for the Separatists, just in case. That's a huge, huge commitment to duty from Padme.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, look, we're going to talk more about Anakin, but, you know, I've got to go flirt with my ex-boyfriend for the good of the galaxy. I understand that on the surface, not going to be easy to accept. I get that.
No. That's a pretty human understanding.
Why it's such a great episode.
Yeah, yeah. And I think for me, this is part of the reason I kind of want to walk through this in order, is I think at that moment then, we see that Padme is, even though she's got all these understandable human emotions, she's doing what she always does, is she is pushing past them and doing her duty to do what she thinks is best for the greater good. Yeah. And then the question really becomes, is it does many times in Star Wars, but particularly in this episode, can Anakin do the same thing? Can Anakin put the mission over his feelings? We get that ominous line in the Jedi Council meeting about the plan where Anakin says, and I'll do whatever I have to protect her. And it's, you know, really powerful that he's standing there in the Jedi Council chamber, basically saying out loud what is going to ultimately cause him to to fall. And Mace, that's why I'm going to cut your arm off. We don't, nobody knows that then. But, you know, it sounds like he's really like, no, I'm going to go. You've given me the assignment to protect her while she does this. I'm going to go do my duty. But there's this great ominous. His feelings are still involved. And then I love that just as it devolves into this really complex plot machinations about all of these separatists who has debts out to who and all that. And Padme gets poisoned and all that starts to unfurl. I love that even as Padme is still lying to Clovis, she also tells him as she is collapsing from being poisoned that duty comes first no matter how we feel. And that even within having to lie to Clovis, she is telling her personal truth. And for me, the one moment of actual, what I would describe as action in this episode is like the key moment for this whole theme and this whole idea, because there's that moment where Anakin walks in, he's in the shadows, he sees Padme in Clovis's arms, and you have to know that every part of him just wants to, you know, ignite that blade and just cut Clovis's head off, right? Not healthy, but we know that's who Anakin is right now. And Padme holds out that disc to him and drops it, which is such a moment of trust. Because if the question is, can Anakin put the mission over his feelings? Padme dropping that is basically being like, I trust you, Anakin. Please, please don't attack Clovis. Put the mission over your feelings. You know, when he force catches it and just walks away, that is Anakin making such a critical choice to respect Padme's perspective and do his duty.
Take this baton, please. It's what's needed.
And I just think it's structured really well to build to that specific moment where Anakin needs to make that choice. And then I think at the end we get that great flip where Clovis, well, in my opinion, not a likable character, still chooses for himself. He chooses personal feelings over all of this clandestine plotting, that he risks his life and his profit, the things that mean the most to him, to save Padme, even though he knows at this point that she doesn't actually care about him. I think that was a good you know, another perspective on this duty versus personal feelings debate that's going on between Anakin and Padme. Any other thoughts for you on that theme or any of those scenes we've been discussing?
I almost want to tie into what I have this thought on, kind of the larger picture. But well said on that. And I love this thing we mentioned it a lot, but that Padme to Leia connection of good of the many over good of myself. And I, by the way, let's be honest, probably a lot of women listening going, yeah, sounds familiar. It's an important thing to focus on in Star Wars, and what Padme does and what Leia does and the stalwarts of the story. I always, take comfort in that, why I love those characters so much. So yeah, Padme making those tough choices is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely good to acknowledge that this is an episode that is going to draw some different reactions based, on life experiences. It's a really great thing to underline. How do you feel that this this kind of idea of duty versus personal feelings, how do you feel like it actually resolves in this specific episode?
I don't think it resolves. I think the duty wins out, but I believe in the end that choice Anakin makes, just a choice of trust, which is a choice of love over possession in this moment. Does he learn it overall? No, we know that. I think that kind of wins the day. And it's interesting you bring up the Rush Clovis one, because he might have chosen heart for the better. There's a lot of things going on with him and the separatists, but you know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I think it makes a statement on duty is not the death of love. Duty is not the end of relationships. Duty can grow and flourish, and all things can be under one umbrella, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I do like that Clovis is, portrayed as human, not a great human, in my opinion, that he cares about profit and he is betraying the Republic. But he does still have this side. I mean, he's being wormy about it. He's hoping he can save her life and still get the disc back, which Anakin is not going to let him do.
Yeah.
And Anakin even has the great snarky line of, it's good to know you have a heart. Yeah, I think I really like the way this resolves, and you're helping me see it better with some of your great thoughts about that last exchange between Ad and Anakin about in Padme about, but it made you doubt me never, that it is a triumph of the greater good in focusing on the duty. Padme is correct as always. Her commitment to the big picture of, look, we're on a mission. We need to get this information. There's a droid factory. That's a huge danger. We need to get this information. I will do what I need to get that. But that is accomplished through a lot of trust, which goes to intimacy and attachment being a strength. If Anakin and Padme didn't trust one another at the right moments, they couldn't have accomplished this, even though it is also like a great success of staying on mission that Padme and Leia are so great at.
Yeah, it's a tiny, tiny peek for me. For me, I take it as a tiny, tiny peek into Padme's, you know, last words of there's still good in him, right? You know, I love putting some building blocks and foundations to that statement, because that moment, Revenge of the Sith and her passing away, can, you know, it can be a little flat or a week. I think we talked about that before, and we'll talk about that again. But so I love building back from moments like that and going, here's why she may have said that and why she may have felt that and why she may have thought that. This is a little moment where Anakin may, in the end, have done something right.
Here are the moments where Anakin lived up to the good person that Padme saw in him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about the kind of reflection of bigger themes or ideas in Star Wars that you saw in this episode. What grabbed you for big picture stuff?
It for the big thing there, and there's probably some stuff I'm not focusing on in terms of the politics and everything in the state of the galaxy and the war and all that kind of stuff. Love to dive into that. But I went into larger story stuff of, I call it Padme and Anakin and the Trials of Forbidden Love. and this idea, the constraints that are around them, some realistic and necessary. Hey, Anakin might lose his job. She might lose her job, which, by the way, I wonder why you want I know it's a very high up apartment, but that balcony has no, anyone can fly by is what I'm worried.
You think that, yeah, there must be some sort of a drone ordinance, right? Where you are not allowed to just be some, you know, fly some drone up there and look into the senator's apartments to try to, you know, find out what's going on.
Because it's one of my favorite things. I even went on Instagram last year, put out a picture of just Anakin sitting on there in Revenge of the Sith. I'm like, nice view. Because I just love that view. I love her apartment. She's got a great digs. Anyways, I'm sidetracking myself. those constraints don't allow them to fully flourish, therefore become comfortable in a relationship, which affects the healthy relationship because they both can't allow themselves this. And how that ties to the larger theme of Star Wars and maybe from perspectives is the question of this big thing that even after Mandalorian season two, a hot button topic to, you know, of attachment and love and sport and what is right. And how did the Jedi get it wrong? What did the Jedi get right of it? Did that change over the years? And I break that all down though, into these two important characters in Star Wars, especially the prequels, but Vader and everything going forward. I'm just like, this is the very human side of the Padme thing and then the Leia thing. You I remember, highlighted very well for me in The Empire and in even Return of the Jedi. Of like, Leia, it doesn't necessarily, there's growth, yes, but it's like she's on this straight path, but it's what she can allow herself to feel with Han. And a lot of that stuff is right or wrong, which she felt she can't do. And a lot of that, I look at Padme and duty, and she's a queen so young, and the fate of her people are on her, and she's such a wonderful character. But that's why I love the moment. There's also a moment early in the Clone Wars you and I were talking about of just they were play acting a little bit of the old standard, we're at the house and you're cooking, I'm clean. It was I understood it was, you know, not a perfect example, but it was just this fun little moment to see me going, what if they were just married on Naboo?
Yeah.
And this was that. And so it's powerful to me because then, because of what you take into the relationships, you can't grow from it. And I personal experience, I've been in a long-term 5-year, no one knew about a relationship because of some various constraints, and it failed. It failed because you couldn't work and correct anything. And Anakin's got some in his heart. And love can easily be confused as possession, especially for men. And I really, that's why I like this episode written by a woman, but it's, I'm okay with it broadcasting to some of the men watching, to be blunt. Anakin does some, there's some bad things, but it's small and it's tiny. And because there's some constraints on them that are, they maybe put there themselves, or that the Jedi Order, or wasn't that, you know, I'm not blaming anybody. It's just an interesting character case study to me of not being allowed to work through things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, there's it was ranty. I just, but that's where it, and Star Wars asks that a lot of attachment, you know, da, da, da.
Yeah, no, I think it's great to reflect how the big picture ideas of Star Wars that you're saying they reflect out to sequel trilogy and Mandalorian and lots of Star Wars storytelling in this Anakin Padme relationship, and there are big galactic consequences, but it's also stuff that is just, it's true of life and relationships. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is this thread of Anakin where he is controlling. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the idea that Shmi is trying to tell him, right, when he leaves, of like, you know, you can't stop the change from coming anymore. You can stop the suns from setting. And that dives right into Jedi philosophy of like, we want to, you know, remain, we want to keep the balance preserved. We want to intervene to help people, but we don't want to be too controlling. We don't want to run the government. It goes to why everything is very difficult for the Jedi during the Clone Wars, because in order to find out what's going on, in order to search for that secret Sith, they have to be kind of suspicious and controlling. And I love that all this is reflected in just a good example of poor behavior in a relationship. Yeah. That Anakin is being controlling. Anakin, you can see like, okay, of course all of us want to control things when it's saving a loved one.
Yeah.
But when it you know, manifests in a relationship by him just saying, yeah, I know you've always been, since you were incredibly young and the queen of an entire planet, you were willing to take risks for the greater good, but now I'm telling you not to. Like, yeah, that's, it's a great moment. It's a kind of a hard moment to watch because it's Anakin and you know, we want to like him in the Clone Wars in particular, but he's just wrong. He's just being controlling in a really ugly, relatable, real life way.
Yeah, totally. You know, and it starts on this small, small level of, yeah, you know, you see his mother died and then he couldn't work through that. He couldn't work through any of that. And so maybe I get Anakin might have an inkling of a good spot, but it's so wrong and it's so unhealthy. It's so just straight up toxic in a healthy relationship. And so it all kind of, because the fall of Vader is pretty huge to Star Wars.
It is. It's pretty big.
It's pretty big.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, you can quote Yoda, you know, fear leading to all sorts of problems and fear. And we can have these fun stuff. But this episode breaks all that down. That big Star Wars thing breaks it down into very tiny humanoid and alien moments all through the galaxy. You know what I mean? It breaks it down in a way that's just like, it's shocking to me to see it like out there, just out and about, of like, Anakin isn't bad just because he had a red lightsaber and wanted power. Anakin failed along the way because for some very probably maybe correctable things, but he just didn't see it. And I don't know. I'm moved by it in a way, as troublesome as it was to, you know, watch Anakin's argument.
Yeah, no, it's troublesome. You know, it is, I think it's one of the things about that makes this episode so tragic is you see him trying to let go of control and do the mission that he came there to do, to wait for Padme's call to take the disc, not to intervene, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it tragic, is that you get that sense that maybe he's listening, maybe he's learning, maybe he's thinking about what his mom told him, but not ultimately. So glad that you brought it up, that idea of control. We talk about the fear of loss a ton in Anakin's fall and in the story of Star Wars. It's why Yoda goes on the speech that you just talked about, a fear leads to anger. What I really loved about this episode highlighting the fear of loss is, I think that's one of the great values of seeing their relationship and seeing Padme's humanity. Mm-hmm. Of, we see that it's uncomfortable for Padme when Anakin is in danger. She is so elated to see him when he comes home from a long time from being in a war. She is, you know, sad when he has to go rush off to do the next thing. But despite her being made uncomfortable by the fear of loss, she copes because she knows she has to, because it's hard. And right. it's such a great contrast for Anakin that he immediately turns around and goes, yeah, but for me, fearing the loss of you, that's a deal breaker. Yeah. I know you were here on Coruscant worried about me for however long I was gone, and you will be again because it's war and I'm a Jedi. But, you know, it's a total deal breaker. Such a great, solid, just contrast of, yep, it's not easy to fear losing a loved one, but you do have to find a way to cope. And that's another place where Padme gets to be a hero.
Yeah. Yeah, Anakin.
Anakin. We can only see that because we see that moment of her being human and being worried and upset, you know, and then we get to see her overcome it.
Yeah. And great stuff. And thank you for letting me kind of just open forum. That's not a word. An open forum in my mind. I'm trying to create a new word. Because then you just see Anakin's life and you see, you know, some of the bad hands he was dealt, but he can't work through it. He can't grow. And it's important. They needed Jedi counseling. Like, not your show. Well, they needed your show, but they needed some Jedi therapists.
They need actual Jedi counseling. Yep.
Yes.
Absolutely. Another big theme for me is, this is a pretty obvious, straightforward one, but something I really like, is what great setup this is for Revenge of the Sith, that the Jedi have asked Anakin to use his personal relationships for political pressure and espionage before. I mean, I think it works really well in the movie Revenge of the Sith, but it's great to see that it has happened before. So I really like that about this episode. I have one other big picture idea that I wanted to talk about, but is there anything else for you?
No, I went all in on the relationship drama this time around, but there's some good stuff, so hit me.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a moment to just talk about the importance of the story of the war of the Clone Wars. And it's in the movies, but it's in the Clone Wars episodes a lot. And, you know, in some ways it's kind of running in the background because sometimes it's in the great newsreel announcements, but sometimes it's an episode like this where Anakin and Padme's relationship is what's front and center. But again, the actual mechanics of the plot, what happens and why, is all about the politics of the war. In this particular episode, it's just about greed. Lucas has talked about greed a lot, is that's a part of the dark side. It's not just fear of loss. It's that I want more power. I want more control so I can stop bad things from happening. Like, okay, well, that's relatable. But then what the dark side continues is, but now I have some power. I want more. I want more. It's never enough. It's never enough. And that's such an important idea to, I think, the philosophy of Star Wars. But it's not just about the Jedi and the dark side of the Force. You know, you can fall to the dark side of the Force with having no Force ability and no red lightsabers. And I think that's what this story about the politics of the war is about, that this is all about greed. This is all about people who want more and they don't care who gets hurt because of it. And that's a moral, I think, that a lot of us can just be like, yeah, of course, Sesame Street taught me that. I know that. But this is Lucas's fundamental criticism of having a respectable face of an organization where the organization itself can be respected, but over time its values slip and these horrific acts can be committed by an institution that can't be questioned because what? We're the legitimate financial system of the government. We're the legitimate political system of the government. Look at our nice clothes and our nice food and our nice palaces. Nothing bad is happening here. But this episode makes it really clear that some really bad things are happening, that for the banking clan and the Nemodians in the Geonosians, there's no political ideology of the Republic that they don't like. They're not concerned about flawed government. They just don't want to be held back. They just want to make profit. And the fact that they are, you know, discussing it as profit is really, really explicit, right? That they're actual line from Clovis of, this investment by the banking clan will create unimaginable new war profits, the largest droid factory ever built. So there's that solid reminder that this is about profits for them. And then you take another step back and realize a lot of these people having this clandestine discussion about profiting more off the war are actual senators. Whether you want to focus on it or not, of course, is your choice. But, you know, this the senator, Lot Dodd, is named after actual human senators that you can Google that Lucas clearly had opinions about to have these names. So I like to highlight it partially because I think it is so important. It is the story of Star Wars. It is the danger of greed. It is the danger of the dark side that takes many forms. But also, whether you choose to engage with it, whether you feel comfortable about it or not, it's explicitly political. It's explicitly by the creator of this tied to the real world. Doesn't mean you have to engage with it, but I think you have to acknowledge that it is there.
I'm going to just give you a well said officially. I'll put that on your resume. Yeah, no, and how it ties into this you touched on. I'm just remixing a little bit what you said, but the greed, the power, unlimited power. You also made me think of Hondo. Doesn't he say that in this operation is no longer profitable?
Yes, it's said in a really, really funny way, but it's just like me stealing these vital medical supplies that are your lifeblood is no longer profitable for me. Bye.
But that's the true mechanics of the war and how it's the cloak of the dark side, everything. But I love what you're saying, because it talks about the idea of balance and how, yes, life and death and all those things in the Luke speech to Rey. But you always say, Joseph, like when the dark side or those who would, or working with it, and they're not. And I love that you said they're not all in black cloaks with red lightsabers. Look what's also going on with Anakin. The dark side takes on many forms, right? And it's about power, control, greed. Anakin's being a little greedy in his relationship here. And now to see it here in the politics, and that's at the core of what Star Wars is trying to tell you. The pursuit of power never ends.
Yeah. Yeah, and you got heroes like Padme and Bail who are trying to get through all that. They're trying to shut down some of the greed across the whole story of Star Wars of this era. They're trying to shut down the greed. They're trying to fix the Republic, fix the democracy, and they're trying to come to the table with people like the Mina Bonteris who have like legitimate actual grievances. And then you have these layers of people taking advantage of those legitimate actual grievances. You got these people taking advantage of it for profit. And then you have, Palpatine and Dooku on top of that taking advantage of it for just power and galactic control, which just makes this era so rich and complicated.
Wonderfully delicious.
Wonderfully delicious. We are going to take a quick break and then we will be back to discuss some of the action moment and then a bunch of other fun moments in this episode. We will be right back.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to discuss some of the fun moments, some of the moments of whimsy, some of the kind of fun canon lore moments in Senate Spy episode of the Clone Wars. We usually start by talking about action moments. Ken, I perceive the Force catch of the stolen plans to be about the only moment that could be described as action. Maybe Padme succumbing to poison is action. Did you perceive any other action moments in this episode?
I said the antidote trade-off.
Oh, yeah. A blaster was pulled, right?
Blaster was pulled. This is officially, it's officially in the notes as an episode with no blasters being fired, no lightsabers ignited or explosions even. We didn't even get ships exploding, no firefights. So
that's
yes.
In Kristen Baver's write-up?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Absolutely. So it's official. No action. But really, some, you know, low-key stress action. So yeah, I put that one, the antidote trade-off, because you got to get the antidote, man, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, and Rush did pull that little blaster. Were you okay with that? Obviously, we've been talking about this episode for a while and really enjoying it. Are you okay with the just not having as much action?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, because I always watch the episode once through with no notes or anything, right? And then I'll start making notes or going through, and then I'll go to a Wikipedia page and click to those great articles that Kristen Baver put up. And that I saw that, and I went, oh, yeah. So I didn't miss it, because I didn't know it was gone. It was a sign.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's got great tension throughout, right? It isn't just an entire half hour of Obi-Wan talking to Dexter, which I know you and I would both watch. But this one, there isn't action, but it is that threat of it exploding at any moment, at any time. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, not a lot to discuss action-wise, so we will move on to favorite moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. Ken, what do you have there?
I mean, let's go right to the main event. I'll take the first part, and you could take the second part. Mace saying they were good friends, and Anakin, I didn't know that. And then, of course, we cut to Obi-Wan Joseph.
Big, big eyebrow moment from Kenobi. Yeah, that was, he was just, come on, Anakin. Yeah, that was so great. And it's such a funny moment and such a great reminder that Kenobi is aware on some level. And the more we watch these episodes, and the more it builds that great moment in season seven where he says to Anakin, like when Anakin's making a secret broadcast to Padme and trying to lie to him, he's like, I hope you at least said hello to Padme for me. It continues for me to feel like Obi-Wan is really aware of this relationship, but not letting himself be as aware as he should be, right? Mm-hmm. That he's not letting himself look into it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's not there.
But it's a hilarious moment. Both, they were good friends. There's a lot of little awkward moments like that where they talk about relationships with the Jedi. There's a part of me that's like, oh yeah, well, this is just trying to have a, you know, a gentle turn of phrase, because this is all ages. But also there's a part of me where it just feels like the Jedi are uncomfortable even talking about like using the K word for kissing.
Oh yeah. Which is why, you know, Rael Avaros comes along and it's just like, yeah, man, we're out there smooching. It was a good time.
Yeah, that is an absolutely great one. What else you got?
I do enjoy Anakin with takeout. It's just very normal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, come on. I think tonight I might be ordering Thai food. You know, it's that kind of day. It's sitcom-y, but also shows that Rush is just, he's creepy. But Anakin flipping the ship to kind of separate Rush and Padme is he's making some incorrect moves there. I enjoyed that there. It's a little indicative of Anakin's anger, but also just on the surface it worked for me.
Yeah. No, I will just preview. That's my only moment of, I would say, dislike. It's obviously Rush is not great, but just it plays different. Just that move in to kiss her, and it's just an uncomfortable beat. It's great that Anakin flipped it away, but in some ways that moment feels like it's a moment about Anakin's jealousy, and something even worse is going on with Clovis moving in on her.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. I said, it's almost like Anakin, like, yeah, okay, we'll allow that.
Yeah, very good that he flips Clovis away, in my opinion. There are a bunch of just little fun moments. I love the 3PO saying, or Padme saying, that will be all 3PO, in a way that really does communicate. My secret husband is home and your services are not needed right now, 3PO.
Please put a sock on the door, 3PO. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yeah. And that to me is like, that's fun, because that is like actual, like just healthy, you know, intimacy between a married couple. Right. Not that I think you have to be married to be intimate.
Yes. Yes.
Another line I like is just, I like Rush Clovis saying, what a wonderful meal. My compliments to the droid. It's just a weird beat, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I like the great delivery from Padme and the great animation work on her face when she guesses that Padme is the passcode.
Oh yeah. Oh, Rush, you're just transparent.
Yeah, it's more Rush creepy. Rush is real creepy. Yeah. This is a creepy episode. Just that, like, is he that stupid and is he that infatuated, to me, is what comes across in her delivery.
Love and possession often confuses the same.
Yes. My last fun line that I liked is 3PO saying, it seems no one wants my company tonight.
Oh, I know. Poor 3PO.
There's a great 3PO line that he was really thinking, like, oh, well, maybe Anakin and I will just chat all night.
Yeah.
Poor 3PO doesn't get his quality time with Anakin. Anything else for you in terms of moments of comedy or whimsy or weirdness?
Yeah, weird. Well, whimsy and weirdness. Robot chairs, that the chairs kind of move, that they got the feet that move and everything. I could really use that after a good meal. Chair, back up. And then it keeps with the kind of, I don't know, it's I'm saying weird. I couldn't help but notice that every service droid was just super sexualized, female-looking droid.
Yeah, that is specifically the BD-3000 luxury droid.
Yeah, right? It just, like, is constant. I couldn't escape it. And I'm like, I see. I got it. So, yeah, weirdness. Not comedy, weirdness.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's dive into some of those canon lore connections. In fact, let's talk about BD-3000 Luxury Droid. We see them as servers working at that high-scale Coruscant restaurant, which looks beautiful. Beautiful place to dine at Padme and Clovis have dinner at. And then, of course, we see them a ton as Lot Dodd servants. And they are obviously highly sexualized robots with unmoving faces and nice little bobs for robot haircuts. Obviously they can be a little uncomfortable, but what do you make of them serving Lot Dodd, that he's, you know, that they're his constant companions?
What I mean, serving Lot Dodd, that I don't like Lot Dodd.
Yep. Yeah, I came up with the same conclusion. So
yeah,
we're in sync.
Shorten it there.
What else did you pick up on for sort of canon lore connections that you enjoyed?
I love seeing the tiny things of just so many sets and locations and other kind of prequel nods. Obviously, it's a Clone Wars. You're going to get that. But again, remember the time when this was out. It just really starts to help celebrate those movies. And you see things and it's familiar, whether it's going to Kaden Modia or just hearing it or just seeing the Trade Federation, not celebrating them, but seeing them. You know, it helped during that time period where the prequels were in our rearview mirror. And George was like going, I'm not done with that. I'm not done with that era. And there's a lot of people who aren't going to be done with it either or going to rediscover it. I just can't escape that there. And include scenes, things like Anakin in a Naboo fighter pilot helmet again, right? He's worn one before. It's a similar design. So I like that, that kind of stuff. Poggle the Lesser, just, I'm a big fan of Poggle.
Yeah. Just clicking away there.
Yeah. Not necessarily his actions, but I do like Poggle. And the final one for me is just, Padme and the Trade Federation, just kind of the ongoing battle. She's a thorn in their side and the thorn in Palpatine's, as we know, as like that, it's constant.
Yes, that they conveniently find yet another way to attempt to kill Padme, and Padme's strength to be like, yeah, of course I would love to go to this planet that is in this organization of the Trade Federation that still has representation in the Senate after they've tried to kill me multiple times. And sure, I will go there and I will act nice to his face in order to try to, accomplish the mission. It speaks to her strength. I love what you're saying about just the Clone Wars making you appreciate the prequels more, the prequel era. And that was one of the things, you know, as I really got into the Clone Wars, it really did make me appreciate it even more. I had always liked the prequels, even though I had criticisms. But this, just seeing things like the Naboo security pilot uniform was just like, made me appreciate it again aesthetically. Of like, that is a cool design. I like that. And seeing all of the great design of Coruscant, which I always enjoy, but seeing the, the great skyscape and the fancy restaurant and remembering like, oh, there's this cool sort of space version of Art Deco. It's not just aesthetically pleasing. It has the point of, this is high society. This is where, you know, of course everything is proper but what's really going on underneath. So it made me appreciate, like, that's a part of the reason for the design of Coruscant being so fancy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
A couple other things that I enjoyed. I like those little LEP servant droids, little rabbit droids, and it's great to see a bunch of them bouncing around.
Yeah.
Great to see Senator Lot Dodd. I really liked it. R2 offers Anakin a ration like Luke had on Dagobah.
Yes.
It is a great little canon moment, but also just a great little friendship moment of R2's like, aren't you hungry? I keep treats inside me.
Warm, moist droid treats.
Yes. I mean, I certainly can imagine that he picked him up, picked it up from a ration pack that they had along, but it looks like he just like, just in case I keep these inside me, like, you know, I got a Mars bar in here too, you know? Love that. The other thing that this episode made me look up because I wanted to reconnect to it is, there is a little bit of a reframing, in my opinion, in the great novel Queen's Shadow of what the relationship between Padme and Clovis actually was, right? Mm. Because the Jedi talk around it of they were great friends, they had a close relationship, all those things that the Jedi feel uncomfortable saying. And then what we learn in Queen's Shadow, I just wrote down the Wikipedia summary that I'll read real quick.
Sure.
Clovis and Amidala would develop the Midrim cooperation motion in the aftermath of their mission, beginning new economic collaboration between Midrim systems while providing aid for Brumlarch and authorizing defense spending to fight off pirates that were attacking Republic transports. So they had been working together for, you know, a whole Padme thing, the greater good. Mm-hmm. And then Wikipedia says, after the bill passed, Clovis celebrated with Amidala, even kissing her. Amidala was horrified, making it clear she was not interested in Clovis that way. Eventually, Amidala chose to end her relationship with him. So I remember seeing this episode of Clone Wars and thinking, oh, they dated.
Yeah.
And then it's reframed in Queen's Shadow to, no, Clovis is a not great guy who came onto her in an unwanted way. And Padme was like, okay, we're not even friends anymore. How do you feel about that? Did you go through that same journey as me? And do you have any thoughts about it?
I know. I'm glad you brought that up. But even though we've read Queen Shadow, that's the small details, not, you know, it's a fresher, newer detail. It's not floating around my brain. Yeah. All jokes aside. Yeah. That is more in line with the Clovis we're seeing on screen. Again, in the hands of E.K. Johnston, we just get to just get more angles and perspectives on the Padme story, which makes me just value her takes even more. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Come on.
I thought that was just really interesting because, you know, it's the sort of from a certain point of view of it feels like this episode was originally written with the perspective of maybe they dated. And I don't know E.K. Johnston's motivations at all. So I'm just speculating, but it feels almost a little bit like a Padme fan watching that episode and going, she would never like that guy.
Right.
So I'm going to reframe this relationship so it still makes sense. And Padme, you know, has not ever fallen for his BS. This has always been a one-sided relationship where Clovis thinks the romantic possibility is there.
Yeah. I'll stand behind that one.
Yeah, whether or not that was the intention, like I said, I do not know, but I find that really, really fascinating that there's always different ways to add more context to existing stories. Anything else for you in canon or lore?
No, sir.
All right, we are heading towards a wrap-up. Look at how much shorter the second half of our podcast is when there aren't a ton of battle droids screaming why as they fall from a high place. Was there anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode?
No, other than you've already highlighted some of the stuff there, and I'm behind you on that stuff too. I'm not saying that there can't be sexy service droids. I'm just saying it continued to pop up, and that's not on the writer at all. Okay, I see what it is. But all that was good, and anything that I disliked it was character actions in this one, which is fun for me. I love kind of looking into the motivations and the reasons behind it and taking even bad behaviors and going, that's why they're here, to show you that they're bad.
Yeah. I think the same thing. There is a lot in this episode that literally makes me uncomfortable, but I think a lot of it is intended to. Mm-hmm. And I think, as you are so right to bring up, I do acknowledge that you and I are talking about this episode from a very specific perspective of our life experiences, mm-hmm. and other people might have different strong opinions based on their life experiences. And I can see that the things in this episode would potentially make people, you know, dislike it or question it or have other insights. So it's great to acknowledge that. Is there anything in this episode that we have not talked about that you wanted to?
Not really. The one note I put is the Padme Anakin kind of relationship struggles are so good in this episode. And I know there's more coming in the Clone Wars, but I do want more in the sense of, I don't want to see them struggle and I don't want to be uncomfortable and everything, but it made it very realistic. And I agree and understand with a lot of stuff George felt he needed to do in Revenge of the Sith. I do enjoy that movie. The Padme stuff is absolutely less, and it's, you don't get to get a lot from her point of view. And, you know, I'm not saying I agree with that, but it's just like, that's the reality. So I'll say it again. You mentioned E.K. Johnson. I hope, and who knows, maybe they're working. I really want a third Padme book that goes up and maybe through Revenge of the Sith. I really want it. It would really, you're talking about being able to go back and add to stories and add new context and new perspectives and new things. It's not just fun. There's a lot of fun in those books of like, oh, that's what the Handmaiden was thinking. Or, oh, that's what there's also just like, let's explore this great character that maybe we didn't get a chance to explore as well. And this episode made me just think about that even more.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I really want that book. And I think there is a lot to it would be really great to explore a little more of the Anakin and Padme's relationship explicitly from Padme's perspective would be great.
Yeah.
Just two other things I wanted to touch on. One, there's that establishing shot of Kirin Imodia, where part of it is these little bridge cities slung between like plateaus. That is just such a beautiful shot and such cool world building. I love that. And then I was going to bring up the Senate thing. I had not done the deep dive that you had about whether or not people should be overheard or not. But I love, because there are other pods floating around in there. It looked like this is when the Senate is not in session. This is an understood thing, that this is maybe a way to have a secret little follow-up conversation. But I love just the visual that Anakin and Padme are having this secret conversation in this darkened Senate chamber. They are talking about, you know, personal secrets and, you know, espionage with galactic consequences. So it's all of these secrets in a darkened chamber, and the Senate should be a place of open debate and clear communication. So it's yet another just visual way to tell both the personal and the galactic story. And I just love it.
Ah, that's great. Delicious. Who knew those Senate chamber pods could mean so much?
Very meaningful pods. As we wrap up here, we always like to talk figures. If you could have an action figure or a toy of any character from this episode, Ken, who or what would you want?
Look, I'm just going right forward, okay? I apologize in advance, Joseph. I want Anakin and Padme Hot Coruscant Knights playset. All right?
You want the sushi takeout?
Nothing scandalous or salacious. Just the great design. She's got a very nice dress on. And he's coming back, you know, right, include 3PO, but have a door that you can lock him out of.
Yeah, I want the, like, yeah, the 3PO leaving action where he's, like, on a little tread and you can pull him just back out of the room.
And look, back when I was playing with my G.I. Joe figures in the 80s, I had a love triangle between Destro, Baroness, and Zartan's sister, Zarana, was in it as well. And I, every day after school, I'd continue the story. So I'm okay with a playset that deals with some real romantic moments and struggles. And I'd be into this, yeah.
Yeah, the playset of home. That sounds really nice. I explicitly do not want an action figure of Rush Clovis. So I'm going to go with an LEP servant droid. I like those little guys.
They are
little rabbit droids. They're just everywhere bopping along trying to do their job.
Love it. I love a life-size scale one with a work.
Oh, yeah. 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 I would like an actual one. Oh, that would be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bet they can carry martinis. I know they can. I believe in them. All right. Next up, we are heading into some great territory. We are going to Season 2, Episode 5, Landing at Point Rain. Season 2, Episode 6, Weapons Factory. Now, you could make the argument that these next two episodes also lead into the two following episodes for a four-episode arc, but we want to break it up a little bit. I think those episodes are a little bit divided, even though it all kind of flows from the same events. So next week, we're just going to talk about those first two episodes, Landing at Point Rain and Weapons Factory. Ken, what do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be?
The moral should be finish that sushi if you bring it home before you podcast. No, as podcast co-hosts broadcasting miles apart, but on the same frequency, have to know each other's heart and trust it.
I love it. I trust your heart, Ken.
And I you, sir.
So that is it from myself, from Ken, for all of those LEP servant droids. This has been the Clone Wars Report.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.